The US and Israel engaged in coordinated joint attacks against Iran last weekend. They attacked Iran, and the war has since spread across the Middle East. And we did a special episode of Berlin Briefing this Monday, and today we want to look at where that leaves Germany. Too long, don't read. Germany is in a dilemma. Call it a violation of international law, which most experts say it is, or accept that that doesn't really get you anywhere. Well, briefly, it was unclear whether the German Chancellor, Friedrich Merz, would be able to go on his planned trip to Washington, D.C. this week to meet Donald Trump because of everything that was going on. But he did. And Michaela Kufner, your host of Berlin Briefing, who's here in the studio with me, he went with him. Hi, Michaela. Good to see you here and be with you because we don't really get to see you a lot in Berlin these days. You travel with Friedrich Merz wherever he goes. And this was a remarkable visit. And I'm really looking forward to hearing all the details.
It's quite a ride, yeah.
And you also met our studio boss of the DC studio, Deutsche Welle's Washington studio, Ines Pohl. You both were in the Oval Office, and it's great to have you on Berlin Briefing today, Ines. Hi. So on today's episode of Berlin Briefing, we want to ask, bye-bye international law? Is it right for Merz to think more in terms of power? Just fill us in. What happened when the first news broke of the coordinated attacks by the US and Israel? Friedrich Merz reacted over the weekend.
Yes, he reacted on Sunday. He said exactly what you half quoted, that this posed a dilemma. And at the same time, he recognized that there may be a time where action is no longer possible against Iran. So he essentially was unwilling to go down that road of judging whether this is in line with international law or not. But the fact that he spoke of a dilemma quite clearly means that his advisors came to the conclusion that it clearly violates international law. And just as a reminder, because Angela Merkel was German Chancellor when Donald Trump was elected for the first time as US president. And when she congratulated him, she basically gave him a long lecture saying, on the basis of international law, I offer you my cooperation. I'm condensing what she said there. Now, those times are over with that statement.
Yeah, and we've got that statement, so let's just listen to Friedrich Merz himself.
Condemning Iran's violations of the law and even imposing extensive packages of sanctions have had little effect over the years and decades. This is also because we were not prepared to enforce fundamental interests with military force if necessary. Therefore, now is not the time to lecture our partners and allies. Despite all our doubts, we share many of their goals without being able to actually achieve them ourselves.
Now is not the time to lecture our partners and allies. Well, that is not something that the Spanish Prime Minister agreed with. Here's his reaction, Pedro Sanchez, last weekend.
Today, more than ever, it is essential to remember that one can be against a hateful regime, as the entirety of Spanish society is, like the Iranian regime, and at the same time be against an unjustified, dangerous military intervention that is outside international legality. One must be against a war initiated without the authorization of the US Congress, the United Nations Security Council, and as I mentioned before, that violates international law.
That violates international law. So we are playing Pedro Sanchez here because these two, Friedrich Merz and Pedro Sanchez, played a huge role in the European debate, in the reactions here on this continent to what is going on in the Middle East, where essentially Europe has got the role of onlookers. They're not involved, but Pedro Sanchez and Friedrich Merz became the focal points of Donald Trump when he looked at how the Europeans were reacting. So just fill us in, what kind of a mood was Friedrich Merz in when he went to Washington, D.C.?
Well, he had a mission and he knew that the whole Iran complex is going to dominate that meeting. The meeting, particularly in the Oval Office, was also the first opportunity for the US press and international press to ask any kind of questions to the US President Trump on Iran. So it was clear the focus was going to be there. But Friedrich Merz wants something entirely different. He wants progress on Ukraine. He wants not just the security guarantees. He wants Trump to be pushing back the Russian President Putin a lot harder on his demands for territory that he doesn't occupy yet, that Russia does not occupy in the Donbass region. There's a fear that that would be a strategic mistake, that giving up those lines of defense would basically open the road to Kiev. That's what the German Chancellor said after the meeting. And then there's a trade issue, that the tariff issue that isn't resolved. There was a deal made last year that essentially is legally void after there was a Supreme Court ruling against that kind of tariff regime that Donald Trump has set up in many places in the world. And now he wants to implement similar tariffs, but on a different legal basis. And here also, he didn't get a clear answer. So that's what Friedrich Merz was really up against. It was a very tough mission indeed, because the Europeans, they want to stay out of Iran.
So, Ines, you were in D.C. You knew that Michaela was going to be there. What was the mood like in the U.S.? You know, what kind of a debate was going on in the U.S. about the goals of this war on Iran, etc.?
In the, you know, in public view, as it might be in Europe, the question if it's like following international law or not. Why is that? Because, I mean, Donald Trump has been broken this law, like just when he kind of kidnapped Maduro in Venezuela. You know, it's kind of this, it's a different approach. They are much more concerned, of course, what it means to U.S. military. I mean, they have young men and women involved. Six already have been killed, at least. That's what we know, and more probably will be following. So this is really a bigger focus than the question if this is like violating international law. So it is a different discourse. This country is also many let's put it that way. As always with the United States, it depends whom you're talking with, because this is such a huge country. So, but big parts of this country were also voting for Donald Trump because he promised not to get the country involved again in these long-lasting big wars. And he is breaking this promise. And this is actually causing some problems for him, also in his really close supporter base, the MAGA movement. So this is really a little bit of a different focus than in Europe, or at least what you have been talking about.
Okay, so now to that Oval Office press point. Maybe we should add to people who don't go on these trips and who only get to see the final product, essentially, they get to watch the live stream of that meeting between Donald Trump and Friedrich Merz. What many people don't realise is that that is essentially the press point before the actual talks, right, Michela?
Yes, I mean, basically all of us were lined up outside the Oval Office, and then there's kind of the word go and everybody squeezes into this very small space, and then there are
openings. Not even everybody, right? I mean,
it's a select group. So the press a couple of people from the press group traveling with the German Chancellor, and then US media were in there, and then Ines was in there as the pooler for the international press. So she was basically feeding information to all of them, and I was the one from Deutsche Welle who was able to report directly and also ask questions. But you basically shout questions into the room, hoping that for some reason Donald Trump is then going to point at you, and then everybody goes silent and you get to ask a
question. How far away are you from him?
Oh, about 5 meters.
Okay. But he did react. Let's listen to, or let's just watch that scene when Michaela shouted a question and Donald Trump responded.
Mark Rutte called on the allies to also help you. And are
what
you
going
to... Well, you have to ask Mark Rutte. He said not as part of NATO, but to be helpful to you in this. And will you...
Well, some of the European nations have been helpful and some haven't. Like Spain has been terrible. They were the only country that in NATO would not agree to go up to 5%. I don't think they would have agreed to go up to anything. They wanted to keep it at 2%, and they don't pay the 2%. So we're going to cut off all trade with Spain. We don't want anything to do with Spain.
Did Friedrich Merz say anything in that situation?
He didn't there and then. And this was actually a classic Donald Trump, because what I was asking was him to explain whether he had any expectations after the NATO Secretary General had basically told NATO countries to also be helpful over Iran. And then he goes off on a different tangent and speaks about the big picture of overall defence spending in NATO and went after Spain, completely erratic and unpredictable, declaring that he will no longer do trade with Spain, which, by the way, he can't do that. It's trade with the European Union. It's a different kind of trade unit. So Mats then later said that he had tried to convince Spain to up the defence spending. That was seen as him not defending his own partners. Trump also lashed out against Britain, which was is quite spectacular, really, because there is this special relationship for hesitating to allow him to use British air bases, particularly the one on Cyprus, and which they did in the end, which poses a huge political problem for Keir Starmer. He had to do a turnaround on that. But we did hear from him, from Friedrich Merz, on the record after their closed doors meeting, that he had addressed that and had pointed out that Spain was an important partner and so is Britain. So he did try to dampen the blow there.
Yeah, and we've got that as well. Let's just hear it from Friedrich Merz.
We are trying to convince Spain to catch up with the 3% at, or 3.5%, which we agreed on in NATO. And as the president said, it's correct. Spain is the only one who is not willing to accept that. And we are trying to convince them that this is a part of our common security, that we all have to comply with this numbers, and this is 3.5 for military and another 1.5 for our military infrastructure. So Spain has to comply with that.
So this felt like throwing Spain under the bus. But then later he did say publicly that he had spoken up in defense of Spain and Britain.
And I want to bring Ines back into the discussion. Ines, you are the Oval Office press pooler, as Michaela just described. So you do go to a lot of those meetings and you do see Donald Trump acting also, you know, around his guests, etc. What did you notice about how Donald Trump sees Friedrich Merz?
So just to give a little bit of a context, Donald Trump actually invented these press conferences in the Oval Office. It wasn't like that. Normally, when a state leader or a high-end visitor also from within the United States was visiting the president in the Oval Office, there was a brief moment for the press to take some pictures, you know, when they shook hands, and that was it. The press conferences are used to take place in the press briefing room. So this is really something Donald Trump invented, and he loves to be in the center. The Oval Office really changed. It became really golden. Like, he has all these images, and you should, maybe you can post some pictures later in the chat, you know, how the Oval Office looked like only 2 years ago. So Donald Trump invented this format. This gives him all the power. It's his room. Right. So we have seen terrible moments there. I think or I'm sure everybody is aware how the situation was when Vladimir Zelensky was visiting and they basically kicked
the Ukrainian president.
Thank you. And also other world leaders. It was really a hostile situation. Also for us journalists, sometimes, you know, he gets really after you, points the finger at you. Whom are you with? You are with a terrible network. He hates, for example, the colleagues from CNN. That was very different this time. The whole setting in the beginning was kind of a little dull and calm, but overall friendly. And then there was a huge, like a very, in my opinion, male interaction between Donald Trump and Friedrich Merz. You know, Trump was like hitting his leg and giving him these bumps. So it was a very, yeah, a good buddy vibe Donald Trump put out there. Of course, he also said some things one shouldn't say. For example, when he talked to one of his advisors and said, well, we will punish them. I don't have the exact quote. Maybe Michael.
Yeah, we should hit the Germans really hard with tariffs, which, you know, everybody laughed. But clearly the whole delegation of Friedrich Merz was thinking, no, please don't. Don't go there. It's not
so
funny.
It was a very friendly kind of mood. It was special. Michaela talked a little bit about it for the US colleagues. Why? Because this is was the first time that Donald Trump talked to press since the war had started. Normally he talks, for example, when he lands with this helicopter in the South Lawn of the White House with colleagues, but he didn't do that since the war started. So that was a huge moment for the American colleagues. Friedrich Merz played that very well. He didn't provoke Donald Trump because it doesn't lead anywhere. He was very cautious, but he made his points. Michaela pointed that out in the very beginning and also throughout the conversation. I, of course, also read kind of the reviews from the German press, and some of them were really harsh with Friedrich Merz, but covering the Oval, you know, on a regular basis, he made the best out of it. It was all about Donald Trump. Donald Trump is hosting these moments, and Friedrich Merz basically just was, you know, just sitting next to him and showing a good face. And he used the moments when he could make his point, and other than that, just let Donald Trump play his role. So from the perspective of a regular kind of visitor in the Oval Office, I think he played it very smartly, the German chancellor.
Yeah, but that is something that didn't go down well, say, in Spain. You know, we played Pedro Sanchez's reaction to the US's attacks, US and Israel attacks on Iran earlier. And then to see that the German chancellor did not come to the defense is something that the press in Spain noticed. You know, why are you letting the Europeans be divided by Donald Trump? Why don't you stand up for us more? Isn't that a legitimate question?
It's a legitimate question, but times have changed. The question is, does that question really lead anywhere? Because the Europeans are already divided. You're not going to get a joint position on Iran. Just not going to happen. So this unity isn't there. And Friedrich Merz made that choice not to publicly withstand Donald Trump and correct him in his assessment. Now, you know, would it have created even more damage? Would he have become even more angry about Spain? Unclear what would have come out of that. It could have made it worse for everybody. And that already, just the fact that we're talking about this already shows that it has more of the characteristics of visiting the court of Louis XIV than actually visiting a US president to talk serious business. But it is very serious indeed. The entire Middle East could potentially be thrown into chaos. It's already looking pretty bad. And the question is, how do you contain this? But what has happened, and I would argue it's happened over the weekend, also with the statement of Friedrich Merz, is that he, as Europe's leading nation, the largest economy, himself has given up on the whole concept of international law to define the future division of power in the world. He doesn't insist on it anymore. And that is a historic change, that Germany won't draw that red line in the sand. Instead, we see Spain essentially say what Germany would want to say, but doesn't. And that just shows not that the Europeans are that terribly divided on it. I think you would get quite a big consensus that this is a very dangerous game that Donald Trump is playing. You'll get a lot of consensus in the US at the moment as well. But it just shows how powerless the Europeans are. They already are pretty not strong enough to defend Ukraine. And they're definitely very powerless when it comes to the bigger picture in the world. That's the reality we are in now.
Just on a side note, I find it fascinating that Ukraine does have a lot of cards in their hands at the moment, because they are the only ones who know how to protect themselves against Shahed drones, and that they're getting all the requests from all the Arab nations now, who are saying, okay, you've been fighting them off, because of course we all know that Iran has supplied Russia with Shahed drones and Russia has been attacking Ukraine. And so, you know, for somebody like Volodymyr Zelensky playing that really wisely, I just find that fascinating.
Well, yes, and absolutely, that could become a game changer for Ukraine.
Absolutely.
If this escalates further, and then the US president suddenly needs the Ukrainian president. And in order to help him out, he might help him get Russia off Ukraine's back. But we simply don't know. There's just so many moving parts at this point in time.
Okay, you said essentially Friedrich Merz has given up on international law. Ines, is that something that is tangible where you are? Because Germany is sort of the last country that is trying at least to meet or that's what they're saying, to meet their own targets in terms of money that they're giving to the international institutions that are the pillars of international law, like the United Nations in New York. You go there a lot. What are you hearing? How afraid are people there that all those institutions are also going to be a thing of the past very soon?
Yeah, it's a huge concern. I mean, the United States is refusing to pay its share. It's the biggest payer for the UN. Donald Trump started this Board of Peace. It's kind of an alternative to the UN, or it's meant to be an alternative to the UN. You can only join it when you pay a huge amount of money. You know, I think just to dial back a little bit, let's be open and frank and honest. The United States has not followed international law many, many, many times. Many wars weren't based on international law. Just, I will talk again about Venezuela and the kidnapping of Maduro, the leader there. It was breaking international law. Does the new role Germany is playing now as a serious player with Donald Trump when it comes to military action, does this come with the cost of breaking international law, or be at least very loosey-goosey in defining the red lines? It seems to be like that. And that, for me as a German, I have to say it's terrible. I mean, the UN was founded because of Germany. It was founded because of the Holocaust. It was founded after the Second World War to prevent a world which is ruled by power, but not by law. But at the current moment, at the current situation with Donald Trump in the White House, being the most powerful world leader in the moment, and the role Germany has to play, and Friedrich Merz explicitly wants to play, he wants Germany to be on the table to discuss with Donald Trump the next steps to be taken. Does he have an alternative? If he would have addressed Donald Trump more aggressively when he talked about Spain, I'm sure, because I'm watching Donald Trump really closely, this whole meeting could have really gone down south. Do I like it as an individual person? No. But I think when you're a politician, sometimes you just have to be pragmatic, you know? So it's really difficult. I think it's really fair to say, you know, personally, everybody or many people probably don't like the way Friedrich Merz is going, but is there really an alternative if he wants to keep the channels with Donald Trump open? So, of course, there are also people, especially in Germany, who say, well, then we do what we have to do on our own in Europe. But as Michaela just pointed out, Europe isn't there yet. Europe isn't strong enough. Europe isn't united enough to really play this part without the United States. So it is a huge dilemma, but I'm also really hopeful when it comes to Ukraine, because indeed, the United States do use their drones. There's actually a factory outside Washington. They produce drones with the technology of Ukraine, because Ukrainian drones are really cheap and easy to produce, right? That shall be interesting how this will develop. And one last thought, Russia is depending on drones from Iran, right? And of course, they don't get the support now. So this is also weakening Russia from that side. So I think over the next weeks, we definitely will have a couple of discussions and debates about drones and who kind of produces them and who pays for them. And if this might actually strengthen the position of Volodymyr Zelensky.
Yeah, and interestingly enough, I mean, you know, you only need to know that it was, out of all people, the Russian president who condemned that attack on Iran for violating international law. He himself, of course, having launched that war of aggression 4 years ago on Ukraine, but also essentially decapitating a country, killing the leadership. That is clearly something that's also giving Vladimir Putin some ideas. So it's going to be much more of there's no longer even the attempt by the US to try and argue some kind of segue into something being in line with international. They've given up on it, and it seems that their partners have given up on that very expectation. And that just creates a new playing field that is only based on military power. Which is, of course, very unsettling for the Europeans, because one thing they have is the rules. And I do remember...
Ursula, If I can jump in there, that is true. And, you know, the Europeans are so proud of that. But then get your act together, you know, then fight and don't fight in front of cameras, you know, get your act together. I mean, Europe is so critical with Donald Trump for many good reasons. But get your act together and stop like fighting in front of cameras, visible for the whole world, of course, visible for Donald Trump and the Trump administration. But get some deals done behind closed doors. And Michaela, I would like to address a question to you, if I might. You just said, you know, Europe won't come together in Iran. So you don't see any way that they find like some kind of common ground also to answer to Donald Trump with one voice?
No, I don't see it. The breadth of the statements and opinions, and you know, this was just Spain and Germany we heard from, but then there's Viktor Orban, who is staunchly on the side
of Hungary.
But this is what I was going to say. There are two factors now. There's elections in Hungary. If Viktor Orban loses these elections, which may well happen, this would really be a great help to the Europeans to be able to find a common voice on this and many, many other issues, including funding for Ukraine. It would just make it so much easier. And the other factor, of course, is China. I was also with Friedrich Merz in China a couple of days ago. He went there before he went to see Donald Trump. That was a complete coincidence. And he was supposed to get debriefed by Donald Trump during this trip. But of course, there was no mention of China in that public meeting, at the very least, although they did talk about it. And one big plea that Friedrich Merz had in with Xi Jinping, of course, was that he should stop supporting Russia in that war on Ukraine. And this will play an even more important role now that the Iranians are preoccupied with their own fight. Basically, the regime is fighting for its own survival, so help is not going to come from there. So what is China going to do? Is China going to fill that gap? Or will China take a step back and stick to what it always says? It says it doesn't want escalation. It is for international cooperation and peace. And, you know, there's a lot of verbal soft cotton talk from the Chinese side, but then they fail time and time again to stop the delivery to Russia.
And I think we just have to look at what Friedrich Merz is probably doing behind the scenes as well, because of course, you know, he will be in touch with the European allies. You know, he is in touch with them a lot, and he will have spoken to Pedro Sanchez as well. And he actually addressed that question again before he left and went back to Berlin. So maybe let's just listen to that as well.
I told him, first of all, Spain is a member of the European Union, and as such, we will only negotiate a customs agreement with the US collectively or not at all. And there is no way Spain can be singled out for especially bad treatment. If anything, we will all come to a conclusion together, and that includes Spain.
Isn't that fascinating that in a day and age where we're seeing so many pictures, every one of us, all the time, we're being bombarded, and yet I think we're going to go back to a phase in history where what's really important is going to happen behind closed doors. You know, that is something that you can clearly take away from that statement, that we will not know, because, you know, we'll get to see the soap opera drama on the open stage, and especially Germans have to get used to finding a strategy around that you don't talk, you know, the heart talk is going to happen behind closed doors.
It always was that way to a certain degree, but it just matters so much more now because Donald Trump has a very two-sided approach. There's the political drama that you see out front, and I would say that Spain has less to worry about than he thinks, because once it goes down to one or two levels down in the US, to those who are actually supposed to implement something, they will realize that it's really much harder to do than possible. So it's always about what catches the president's attention, and we're back to the kind of Louis XIV court kind of scenario again. So it's very threats are very short-lived. with Donald Trump, but also promises and pledges and contracts are very short-lived. The fact that he backs away or didn't reassure Friedrich Merz that he will stick to that already very lopsided tariff agreement that foresees 15% on European goods, most goods, in exchange for zero on the US side. That was a pretty good deal for the Americans. There was a lot of criticism of Ursula von der Leyen already,
the European Commission president,
for having done such a lopsided deal. But Friedrich Merz didn't come back with any reassurance. So it's this element of uncertainty. If out of this mayhem in the Middle East, there comes a new dynamic where the US president needs Ukraine to contain this again, that is a very positive dynamic that is created. There are midterm elections this fall, and with US lives being lost, gas prices going up in the US, and here also, by the way, over this very war that we're seeing unfold, and this is something that could potentially rein in the US president. That would be my personal assessment, but Ines, I would be much more interested to hear what you have to say about this.
No, that's important, Michaela, that you raised that. I mean, we will have midterms in November. That's really just around the corner. I've been talking a little bit about it. The support from the American people for this war is not big. Also because he didn't involve Congress, of course. So that's also like a problem for the Democrats and for the Constitution, if you wish. So if, and it looks in the moment as this might happen, if this war draws on for a long time, it's going to be really difficult for Donald Trump because his kind of ability to stick with a topic for a long time is very limited. He wants to move on. In many ways, he was able to do. Nobody's talking about Venezuela anymore. But with this conflict, that's different because it's spreading throughout the region and it can't be just stopped. So he might really have opened the box of the Pandora here. And this is a huge concern also for military experts, actually from both parties. So that's a very difficult situation for Donald Trump. I think that's also one reason why he was so friendly with Friedrich Merz, because he needs also the optics of another leader to support him. So in that regard, he definitely used Friedrich Merz's visit, which was planned long before the war started, to kind of give him the approval. Listen, I started this war, but I'm still accepted on the world stage. So the next days will be crucial for Donald Trump. It's a very difficult situation. I was in the briefing room yesterday where the press spokesperson of Donald Trump, Caroline Leavitt, briefs once a week at least. And you can tell she is nervous. She does not want to be addressed with these questions. What's plan B? What will be happening next? So it's a very difficult situation also for the president. If this war draws on, he might really face a huge backlash in the midterms, and that might diminish his power for the last 2 years of his presidency.
Thank you so much for your analysis, Ines, and for all the insights that you've shared with us. And just keep reporting from the Oval Office and fill us in, take us by the hand. And same to you, Michaela. Always great to hear your reports from those trips. And thank you out there very much for joining us today on Berlin Briefing. And if you're still here, that means that you're interested in what we're discussing. And that might mean that you're also interested and keen to fill in a little questionnaire, because we really want to hear who you are. So make sure that you click on the link that we'll be posting down here and give us some feedback. It doesn't take long. And we look forward to getting into contact with you and hearing your thoughts. Make sure you subscribe to our Berlin Briefing newsletter that comes out once a week. And I hope that you'll be with us next time.